Steve, I've heard you pontificate about Bill Curry Ford, the dealership that's a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. Let me take over here. I have personal experience with Sean Sullivan, the general manager. We're driving the 2020 Escape cherry red leather seats, bun warmers. It's one hell of a vehicle, reliable, a smooth ride. Can't wait to jump in it. You know, I got my own car, and my wife and I switch off and on, and we're fighting over the Escape. We both want to drive it. You know, it lifts you above the crowd a little bit in terms of your seating. Huge trunk space, beautiful for our beach chairs. Anything else you got that's a little bulky? And, Steve, I'm the guy that's going to endorse Sean Sullivan and BillCurryFord.com. We don't need your nonsense anymore. I'm taking over the endorsement business when it comes to Bill Curry. How do you like that? And I'm putting two cases of Bramosa from Big Storm Brewery right in my trunk.
Yeah. It's that time again. The Ira Kaufman podcast at JoeBucksFan.com and the star of the show. He is the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, Uncle Ira, the King of Newport Richie, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. All the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years, where you get personal service from General Manager Sean Sullivan, a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com is where you need to start shopping immediately. Ira is here. You can hear the last podcast at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, until they move over to the Google platform for podcasts. Sage, how are you?
Stevie, I'm going to paraphrase the great John Gruden and say that we are so close, in theory, to the start of Buccaneer training camp, and the glare from the pitiless rays of the sun therein that we're so close, I'm going to need shades, Isbitz. I mean, we're supposed to be less than 2 weeks away. If the damn union and the owners can get together on a couple of protocols and agree on a couple of things, we are ready to roll at One Buck Place.
And you have your tentacles all over the place. If the NFL and NFLPA agree to get rid of preseason, is that going to push training camp back?
I don't think necessarily. So it would give teams about 6 weeks to prepare for the September 10th opener and that following weekend. Not necessarily. Now, I got to say this. You know, this talk about no preseason at all, while I understand it on a couple of levels, you know, if I'm a sixth-round draft pick or an undrafted free agent, I can't be happy with that, because putting stuff on tape in a game situation, albeit, you know, at least as, shorts football to an extent, because you're not facing regulars, but putting it on tape is a big part of trying to make the team that picked you or that picked you up or showcasing yourself for other teams. Steve, that is a problem for the guys that are not the starters. You know, maybe fans don't care about that, but there are ramifications for going without the preseason, Steve.
Oh, they're huge. I mean, there's got to be 25 guys on each team who don't really want preseason, maybe 30, and the other 60, and they're all have the same union vote. The other 60 are like, give me a game so I can, you know, I've been working all year to try to show off what I got. Give me my 30 plays to try to make a career for myself. If I'm going to have to slog through training camp anyway and risk getting virus, put me in a game.
Yeah. And Steve, those are the guys that play, three quarters of the preseason. So those are definitely the guys that are getting affected. You know, Tom Brady wasn't going to play much in the preseason anyway, if at all. Lee, if at all.
Ira, Tom Brady does what he wants. He's in charge. He's the coach. He's the de facto GM. He's going to play as many snaps as he wants.
Ira, your point is even more, it's a great point, by the way, and it's even more acute because now there's no more arena football. There's no more AAF. There's no more XFL. So outside of your college tape, the only tape you're going to get is a preseason game. So as much as I hate preseason, it's a hell of a point that you made.
And, Lee, for anybody who says that, well, these sixth-round picks, they'll have 6 weeks of training camp beating up on each other. Steve, they're not going to be beating up on each other. When the protocols come out and are determined for training camp, I think people are going to be shocked by the lack of contact drills. Look, it's soft to begin with, you know, a lot softer than it was 20 years ago. And, Steve, under these conditions, I don't think people are going to even recognize training camp.
I disagree with you, but we'll leave it there, Ira. I don't think anyone's going to agree to no contact. They'll end up with more injuries if they try to play shenanigans with not letting guys actually practice and then jump into a game, especially like the Bucks opener on turf. You'd have like guys dropping with injuries left and right. But we'll leave that alone, Sage. We've got so much to talk about on this podcast, a whole plethora of fun. I'm so fired up. What I want to get to first, Ira, is something that's been out there, and we don't talk a lot about money and contracts too much on the podcast because, you know, that shakes out. But one thing that I think is going to get a little clearer soon is the whole notion of the salary cap going down. Now, Mike Florio, back in mid-May, he wrote up a whole thing explaining that there is no incentive for any party in the NFL to lower the cap. Players don't want the cap lowered. Owners don't want the cap lowered because they've invested millions in their front office determining a plan for the team. And if you drop the cap, then all that work that they put into building a team is going to get undermined. And they know the future TV contracts are going to be there and that nobody has an incentive for the cap to drop. Therefore, logic says, as a negotiator, it is not going to drop. It'll stay static. And Bill Polian last night was on NFL radio adamant, saying by rule, the salary cap cannot go down. It's a misnomer. And he was sort of said that that's going to be clear to everybody pretty soon. So that's interesting for the Bucks that if they do end up with a static cap by some sort of rule or by some sort of decision or both, that's interesting to how the team building will play moving forward, especially, you know, in light of Shaq Barrett just signing his franchise tag and possibly being a huge money free agent next year.
We don't want Mike Greenberg tearing what little hair he's got left out. We don't want that. Mike Greenberg is the Buck capologist, and he's pretty darn good at his job. And, Steve, your point is correct. There's a big board somewhere in one Buck place, could be in Jason Light's office, certainly in Greenberg's office, where they are projecting Buck salaries for the next 3 years out. That's what they do. That is being responsible as a team executive. And there's quirks, you know, players retire, players get cut, new players come in. Understandable. But you have a basic framework, Lee, for 2-3 years out. Otherwise, you're not doing your job. And I agree with Polian, Lee, somehow, some way, I don't believe the salary cap will go down. And if it remains static, that's a statement in and of itself, Lee, because I believe recent history shows us that the cap jumps markedly from year to year. It's been going up significantly, not, 0.003%. It's been jumping 10, 15, 20 million in 1 year. And so if it remains static, that's a big statement, Lee. And if teams have to borrow against future TV contracts, which are not going to go down, Mr. DeKemper, we know that.
Yeah.
One day we will be over this COVID pandemic. We will, and football will return as we know it, and the craving of the TV networks will not dissipate. So if they spread it out, Lee, any shortfalls over 5 years, 10 years, that's what they're going to do. Lee, we used to talk about the cap dropping 40 mil. I don't think there's any chance that could happen.
Well, with the TV contracts, I would, and this may sound crass, and I'm not trying to be crass. I'm just trying to be matter of fact. I think the TV networks don't mind a pandemic if football season hits, as long as football's being played, because you have a captive audience. You have less people in sports bars, more people watching at home. That's good for them, more eyeballs. it's interesting that Polian said that. Polian's the only guy I've heard to say that. And I worship Bill Polian. I think that guy was one of the smartest people to ever work in a NFL front office in decades. So it's interesting that he would say that. Now, I always quote Michael Lombardi because he's a great quote, even though I think he plays games with the truth. But in a recent podcast of his, he said the salary cap's going to, unless there's some kind of negotiation between the association and the NFL, he expected, and I'm not joking, he expected the salary cap next year to drop at least $20 million, maybe as much as $50 million. And I'm like, holy smokes, they drop, if it's $20 million, this Bucs defense is going to look drastically different than what it looks like now in a year.
I'm glad you brought it down to the Buccaneer level. We're talking about a team that that needs to address the Chris Godwin situation going forward. I'm not saying he's got to get an extension next week, but, within a year, it's an issue. And as far as if Bruce Arians is still here and Jason Light's still here, Chris Godwin's not going anywhere, gentlemen. You can't let a guy like that go, and he wants big-time money. And he deserves it. He's not going to fall apart in 2020 with Tom Brady as the quarterback. He's going to continue to be incredibly productive. And Lee's point is strong. JPP, Shaq Barrett, Sue. They got to get around to Vita Vea in a year or two. Levante, absolutely right, Lee. Big concerns for the Bucs. So, Steve, I don't see any way this thing's going to drop $20 to $50 million. If it does, and the Bucs won't be the only team in turmoil, but they'll be top five.
Well, I heard an interesting analysis also on, it was an agent, I forgot his name, on Sirius. He was talking about how if they have to cut the salary cap, that it's likely that the union and the owners would agree on cutting it in 2024, because they would wait until all the guaranteed money all among current players expires, and then the teams would have time to plan and know that, hey, okay, in 3 years, salary cap's going to be cut, and then they could plan for it. So I agree with Florio, really, that there is no incentive to cut it next year. It just doesn't make sense for anybody, especially unless your team really sucks and you you want to get it out of the way. On the Bucs front, Ira, maybe I'm crazy, but I still think the Buccaneers blew it with Shaq. I think they blew it with Shaq because you could have crafted a contract with Shaq that gave him $10 million this year and locked him up for more money next year and maybe trickled some into a third year. But the point is that if you gave him $10 million this year and kicked money on Shaq down the road, you could have used that extra $6 million to sign players that could have helped you this year in a year where you're really 100% all in for a Super Bowl with a 43-year-old quarterback.
Understood, Steve, but you also have to craft it in a way that makes sense to Drew Rosenhaus, who's as crafty an agent as there is out there and very good at his job. And I understand about the deferred money, Steve. There's ways to do it. The Bucs have done it in the past successfully. But you got to get Barrett and his representatives to sign on. It's not impossible. And I'm with you in terms of that sense of urgency. You want to add a player or two in a key position, maybe a safety, maybe a running back. And I can't argue that point, Steve.
Well, it's a fun thing to keep an eye on. Of course, we have a season to get to first. And just think, Ira, this time next year, well, actually February of next year, we could be looking at Shaq Barrett, Levante David, and Chris Godwin all having seasons where the Bucs would say, man, we got to tag that guy to keep him. And there's only one tag, and that's three players. So it's an interesting prospect. I thought they would have gambled on one guy, but we'll see. You know, there's still time to get Godwin a contract if they want to get a little creative.
Steve, before we continue on the Buc front, let's just take a couple of seconds. Just a couple of seconds to acknowledge the passing of David Lewis. He was a very good Buc player, worthy of the Ring of Honor. Debatable down the road. But when Ron Wolf says, you know, he was the best out of those four linebackers on a very good Buc defense that was more than just Leroy Selman, who was the kingpin, no question. But if he's the best out of those linebackers in the 3-4 alignment, that's high praise. Ron Wolf knows a player, Lee, when he sees one. You know, Ron Wolf was in charge in 77 when they drafted David Lewis. And I got to know him over the years. He was a frequent visitor to the press box on Buck game days. I would see him at training camp, alumni day. He was over there with all his buddies from that 79 team, that magical team. And very active in the Tampa Bay community. So David Lewis will be missed. I think an integral player. You know, look, in retrospect, the Bucs have had two sort of glory periods. One was short, and that was 79 to 82 maybe, led by defense, powered by defense. And then, of course, you know, 97 to 2002, led by defense. And David Lewis was very integral to that first period.
Yes, Sage, he did make the Pro Bowl in 1980. He only played 5 years with the Bucs, so I don't think there's any Ring of Honor chatter for him, but an impactful guy, and 65 years young. It's a shame. It's a shame. All right, Ira, I'm going to give you a hypothetical. You're in your house. You see some water. You smell some mold. What do you do?
What do I do? I call Florida's Elite Restoration. Pronto. I don't waste any time. Look, there are certain things that go wrong in every house that you can wait a week or two, maybe a month. They're minor. Mold stands alone in many ways. And if you dilly-dally and waste time about addressing it, you've probably got a major problem on your hands. Alternatively, if you call Florida's Elite Restoration quickly, as you should, then a potential major problem gets handled in a prompt manner, an economical manner, and a quick manner.
And Sage, they will come to you free. They'll talk to you free. It's all free to figure out what's going on. FloridasElitereStoration.com is the website. FloridasElitereStoration.com. You can get information there, get all your contact numbers, reach out to them online. Great local company. As you said, Ira, they'll help you with any disaster possible, except Buccaneers-related disasters when it comes to throwing remote controls and breaking fish tanks and things like that.
Call Florida's Elite Restoration pronto.
All right, Ira, Lee wrote something very provocative about Levante David. And as we mentioned in last podcast, ESPN, Jeremy Fowler has surveyed 50 coaches, executives, and players to name the top 10 players at each position. And the subsequent honorable mentions based on the voting. Now, Levante David, Ira, where did he rank?
All linebackers.
No, this was middle linebackers, inside linebackers.
Inside linebackers.
Non-edge rushers.
Yeah, non-edge rusher linebackers.
He ranked top three. That's where he ranked.
Number two, right, Lee?
Yep.
He was number two overall. So Lee's contention was that
Was Wagner first?
I can't remember, but it's all spelled out in the story.
It's all at JoeBucksFan.com.
Yeah.
Now, Ira, and it's behind a paywall at ESPN, so you're not going to find it. Don't waste your time, unless you want to fork over the cash. So, here's the thing, Ira. Lee's contention was that, wait a minute, if the players and coaches and executives have Levante David as the number two linebacker, non-edge rusher, then why is he not making the Pro Bowl? Maybe there's some sort of a conspiracy because ESPN, you know, doesn't want no-name guys in the Pro Bowl, and maybe it's not legit with the voting and the fans and all that, because keep in mind, Gerald McCoy didn't get a lot of fan votes ever, but he would make the Pro Bowl each year, and it's an interesting conspiracy theory, but what do you make of the whole thing overall?
Well, the thing that jumps out at you is, you know, the Bucs have sucked. I mean, you can't get around it. And until the fall of 2020, their appearances on national television have been minimal and justifiably. I mean, Monday Night Football hasn't wanted the Bucs on. I mean, let's be serious. They don't want a 5-11 team on. That's not going to garner any national publicity. The Bucs have been under the radar for 12 years, gentlemen. Of course, it's had a direct impact on how fans, the national fans, they don't know who Levante David is. They're not living in Temple Terrace. They're living in Texas. They never heard of Levante David. We have to understand that. Maybe McCoy benefited from less competition at the defensive tackle position when there was really only four or five or six guys that were worth talking about. And of course, Luke Kuechly has taken one of the spots for the last 7 or 8 years. So there's not a lot of wiggle room. You could argue about David and Kuechly. I think Kuechly was the better player. People are going crazy about the stats. Stats can be misleading a little bit. Kuechly in coverage was absolutely fantastic. He knew the plays before they developed, so that's an intangible. He spread that to the rest of the defense to a degree that I think puts him at a spot ahead of David. And now Keekly's gone. And if the Bucs are successful, you got to think David's going to make that Pro Bowl. I think he has one to his credit, Lee. One. Probably should have three or four. I think that's going to be rectified this year if the Bucs have the season we anticipate.
Yeah, my contention is, you know, I don't put anything past ESPN. I do not. They've demonstrated over the decades that there's really no such thing as journalism ethics. And actually, journalism ethics is a notion of the past. That's all gone. It's all gone in 2020. There really is no such thing as journalism
ethics. Lee, why should they care who makes the Pro Bowl? Why should ESPN care?
They want eyeballs, Ira. They're in the business of eyeballs. And as you just adroitly pointed out, that, you know, most people in the country, they don't know who Levante David is. So how are they going? Is anybody going to say, outside of Bucs fans, you know, I got to watch the Pro Bowl because this guy Levante David's on there? No.
Yeah, but Lee, they're not watching the Pro Bowl because of Luke Kuechly, are they?
Oh, I think yes. Luke Kuechly's a big name. For example, when he was on NBC, it was all about Luke Kuechly, Luke Kuechly, Luke Kuechly. Steve pointed out, and you did a little bit, Ira, Gerald McCoy, and this drove Bucs fans wild, Gerald McCoy had an out, you know, over-the-top personality. He was always on TV shows. He was always talking. He played for a high-profile college team. Not to say Nebraska isn't, but Levante David was only there for 1 year, and they didn't really play in a big bowl, where Gerald McCoy played for a national championship. But, you know, Gerald was always out there, all the talk shows, radio, TV, you name it. He'd show up in studio. He'd show up in person. He was always engaging. Where Levante's a quiet guy. He doesn't like that attention. And I really think that killed him. And, oh, by the way, the only Pro Bowl Levante made was the Pro Bowl that was played a season after he got fed up and did Radio Row at the Super Bowl, which drove him nuts. And
you're right.
I don't think that's a coincidence. But, yeah, ESPN, they want names. They want names people recognize. They want names that people want to watch. And so that's why when you pointed out Levante, you hit the nail on the head. People in Texas, they don't know who Levante David is. Now, your hardcore football guys, the people like Steve and I, specifically Steve, that listen to NFL radio 24/7, they tape Florio's show, they tape this show, they record that show to watch later. People that inhale football 24/7, oh, yes, they know who Levante David is, but that's what, 8% of the people who are football fans? You know, that's the hardcores. They're always going to watch the Pro Bowl because it's close to football. It's not football,
right,
but it's
right.
Close to football. But, you know, that's what ESPN does. That's why, you know, ESPN constantly has the Yankees, Red Sox, Yankees, Red Sox, Yankees, Red Sox, because people watch. So I believe that's, you know, when you asked me, why does ESPN care who's on the team? They very much care who's on the team. By the way, I got to tell a good story. I've been waiting for an opportunity to tell this. You know, ESPN has had the rights to the Pro Bowl since 2015. Oddly enough, I think that's the same period where Levante David's been shut out of the Pro Bowl. Again, I don't believe in coincidences. To give people an idea of the power ESPN has, especially the influence with players and with sports leagues, the Pro Bowl, and both you guys have been there, you know, everybody and their brother goes to the Pro Bowl reporters because that gives people an opportunity to write stories. They're not going to be there for the Pro Bowl game, but mostly for the practices, the opportunity to talk to players, get interviews, start to do some stories, build up some content for the lean weeks in between the Super Bowl and the combine. Well, there was a crowd around Cam Jordan, maybe a dozen reporters, maybe 15, beating him with questions. It's almost like a mini version Super Bowl media night where like 80 guys are around one podium trying to get to a question or two to a player. Well, anyway, all of a sudden I hear in the distance someone screaming, Katie Nolan, Katie Nolan, Katie Nolan. And I looked up and here's this entourage of producers, of cameramen. Katie Nolan's in the middle of it. And there's some producer who's leading this mob. It looked like a freaking mob just storming in to take over the little huddle, not little huddle, the dozen reporters or so. And his producer kept screaming, Katie Nolan, Katie Nolan, Katie Nolan. And she didn't stop screaming until they barged right through those reporters. It was like a wedge going into the middle of a kickoff return team. Katie Nolan, Katie Nolan, Katie Nolan. And they stopped right in front of Cam Jordan with the camera right there with the producer screaming, Katie Nolan. And there's Katie Nolan standing right next to her with a sheepish smile on her face. And hey, she obviously had Cam Jordan's full attention. It was the wildest thing I ever saw. But this producer must have said 20 times, I mean, screaming. You could have heard her to the next practice field. Katie Nolan. It was basically saying, out of the way, Katie Nolan, out of the way.
Well, you know, Steve, that example shows that money buys access, which is one of the reasons I've asked you to pony up a half a mil to the Bucks to get us the Bruce Arians show on our podcast. But, Steve, from a Levante David perspective, let me boil down Lee's point. Our advice to Levante David when he reports to camp in a couple of weeks, wear a kimono, young man, wear a kimono.
Very good.
You know, that's true. He got a lot of play out of that, didn't he?
He did. He did.
I spent all night. I did not sleep, Ira. I was up all night thinking about Lee's conspiracy theory and doing some deep analysis here. And while I don't put anything past ESPN, a few nuggets here. First of all, the bottom line is, and I hate saying it because I'm one of them, but Buccaneers fans absolutely suck when it comes to voting for the Pro Bowl. They're horrible. They're awful. They don't compare to other markets, and that is in control of the fans, one of the few things that's in control of the fans, and it's got to be fixed if they want to step up and see these guys there. In 2016, the Pro Bowl, 2016, and this sort of blows maybe a little bit of smoke into Lee's theory, but I'm not sure. It might have taken ESPN some time to evolve. The 2016 Pro Bowl, 10 Carolina Panthers in the 2016 Pro Bowl. Now, they didn't play because they made it all the way to the Super Bowl, but ESPN didn't know that beforehand. So 10 Panthers got there behind the fan votes. In 2018 Pro Bowl, 6 Jaguars got there and were at the game. So I don't know. I don't know if they decided we can't have this many people and something happened there, but it comes back to the fans who just don't vote. Gerald McCoy also was, you know, as Lee was hinting at, he was the number 3 overall pick, so much more name recognition versus Levante David.
And Steve, of course, the common denominator, Steve, of what you're just saying is, those two teams were teams that were having very, very good seasons, and the fans were very excited about their football team,
yep.
And it showed up in the Pro Bowl voting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? If the Bucks marketing and their staff that handles this kind of stuff, they're brutal as well. They're awful. You know, if you want Levante David voted in, get out there with your iPads, walk around the parking lots, and hand people iPads so they can vote Levante David into the Pro Bowl. Don't wait for them to do it at home. But that's another story for another day. Ira, what I think's important is, because I really like this survey by Jeremy Fowler, because it's 50 people. I believe it's legitimate, and it's the nice cross-section, players, coaches, executives. But I wanted to point this out because it's been a point of contention on this podcast. We each have different views on this, and I have to throw this out there because it leans toward my view, of course. So and you guys can poke some holes. But the interior defensive tackles were named in the top 10 in the honorable mentions, and I have been much more critical of Vita Vea than you guys by a mile, and he was not named, didn't show up as a defensive tackle. Neither did Sue. I'll let you guys react.
I think that's nuts. I think that's nuts. I think that's nuts on the face of it. And I'll tell you why. I don't think we need any kind of crazy deep dive. The number one rushing defense in the National Football League, and I think by a considerable margin. I think teams average 3.3 yards an attempt. That's a very, very low number. You know it's low number when it's lower than what the Bucs average when they carry the ball. So you know they're doing a hell of a job. And who should get the credit? The interior defensive linemen. Not all the credit, but they're either making the play or they're tying up guys or they're getting in the backfield and disrupting plays. And McCoy makes it, you know, six times when they don't have a rushing defense that's anywhere near what they showed in 2019. Total lack of respect for this organization. Once again, Lee.
Well, as far as respect goes, win games. You earn respect. It's not given. You earn it. I've seen enough clips of players breaking down tape where they just go bananas about Vita Vea, and I'm just going to – this is a reach. I know I'm reaching here. I know I'm saying something that's probably way out of bounds, but I trust those guys that know – I trust the guys that played in the NFL know more about football than I do. I'm just going to take that stab. It's just a hunch. Vea, it could be, I didn't see that particular article that she's referencing. I don't know how many nose tackles, and he's a nose tackle. I don't know how many nose tackles made it or not. And I don't see a slug out there with my own eyes. I don't see a lousy player with my own eyes. So as I can only go by what I see. I don't see a guy getting pushed around too much. As far as Sue, everybody has an image of Sue, and he's not that player anymore. I don't think I'm saying anything derogatory. He's not the Sue of 10 years ago. He's a great run stuffer, and periodically he'll make a splash play, but he's not the Sue of 10 years ago, not even close.
Let me clarify. We already heard you on Vita Vea. No, I'm teasing you, Ira. I just wanted to clarify. I don't think he's a lousy player either. I just don't think he's Pro Bowl material on Vita Vea, but we'll get to see that play out.
Well, Steve, he's only been healthy one season. And I think he made some strides last year. I like his future. I think he's going to be a Buck for a long time.
And Ira, the 2012 Buccaneers run defense and the 2015 Buccaneers run defense, exact same statistically. Look it up, Sage. Gerald McCoy right there. Those run defenses were every bit as good. Buccaneers even had a top 10 defense with Lovie in 2015, believe it or not.
Well, Steve, all I'm saying is it's hard to play run defense much better than the Bucs did last year.
You're darn right.
And they faced a lot of good backs, guys. I mean, now let's not forget what they did to McCaffrey twice.
Well, McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, they faced a murderer's row of running backs for a while there, and they shut those guys down.
You know, Todd Gurley. There were other ones too, Steve. So,
oh, absolutely. You know, the run defense was great. I was just saying that you said McCoy wasn't on a run defense as good. Those were stellar. It makes you wonder, guys, as we talk about this, thinking of fans and the defense, makes you wonder how they allowed 28 points a game. It really makes you wonder.
Well, the communication in the back end was awful. It was awful the first half of the season. And I think it was admittedly awful. I think Bowles said it. I think a couple of the young cornerbacks said it. And I don't think it should have took that long to turn that thing around. We'll see if they can keep that momentum going. But the pass defense was a lot better the final 6 weeks. Having said that, Lee, they didn't exactly face Patrick Mahomes every week down the stretch either.
I'm dubious of the excuse of communications only because of how Mike Smith deemed that. Although Mike Smith was literally meaning communication, as in people couldn't understand the dude calling the plays. Literally, could not understand. But yeah. To me, that's a euphemism. That's another empty word to cover. You know, I'll just say communication and everybody will write it down. So I'm dubious about that. But there's something to do with Vernon Hargraves. Again, I don't believe in coincidences. That defense, pass defense, turned things around. It just so happened after Hargraves was let go for serial loafing. So if that was the problem, and I think it was, because, again, once they got rid of Hargraves, that was a different pass defense. What the hell took them so long to not bench him or throw him off the team?
You know, and Steve, passes defended, that's a key statistic. That means you're in the neighborhood. You know, you're not 12 yards away. It's not the old Vernon Hargraves 12 yards away. You know, Brent Grimes 12 yards away. Ryan Smith 12 yards away. And Dean and Davis were exceptional, especially the second half of the year.
Uh-oh, you're going to get Steve going now.
No, so, look, I'm saying that because one of my big points from a couple of years ago was they're nowhere near the ball. See, that's the point I was always trying to make. They're not near the ball. And if a guy makes a great catch in traffic, Steve, you live with it. It's Michael Thomas. It's DeAndre Hopkins. It's Julio Jones. You give him credit. But if you're 5 yards away from the guy when he's catching the ball, that's on you, Steve. That's on you.
Ira, don't get me started with the passes defense. I need some sleep tonight. I really do. There's nothing. It's great to have pass defense, but it's an interesting statistic in a lot of ways. Let me stand up for Brent Grimes, led the NFL in passes defense in 2016.
I'm talking about the Brent Grimes of 2018.
I know who you're talking about. Ira, who's the all-time leader in the Hall of Fame in passes defense? Does anybody know? No, they don't know. Is it going to be part of your argument for Rondé Barber, his pass defense numbers? No.
I bet you they're strong. I bet you they're strong.
All right, Sage, but, you might want to take a look. You might want to take a look.
Well, Steve, what does passes defended mean? And it meant that the pass was not complete, Steve. It wasn't complete. If you got a completion, you don't get a pass defended.
I understand. If the guy's not open, usually the ball doesn't go that way. There's also that, too. If the guy's covered, the ball
all
doesn't
right.
go.
Well, you want more than 12 picks, Steve, and you're not wrong. So in that regard, you're not wrong.
No, there's nothing wrong with passes defense. The Buccaneers did a great job with that late. The rookies showed they could close on the ball. I'm not against it. It just drives me insane. But my insanity is not important today, Ira. All right.
And I'm worried about your sleep habits over there, Stevie.
Well, Lee, I read that thing by Lee at midnight. I was up all night. I was research. What kind of beer are you drinking these days? Are you going with the Bromosa from Big Storm Brewing Company? Or are you sticking with your favorite Tropic Pressure Florida Ale? What are you doing? What kind of Big Storm beer are you drinking these days?
Well, I thought I was firmly on the Tropic Pressure side because it's so refreshing in this heat. And then, you kind of turned me on to the Bromosa. And now I'm torn. I don't know. I mean, I might be open to trying another one because every time you tell me to try something, one's, as good as the next one. They got a big, selection, craft beers. Right now, the Bromosa has nudged itself firmly ahead of Tropic Pressure in my book.
Well, Ira, what's even better news for you and for fans looking to save some money, at Big Storm Brewing Company, at their tap rooms, the beautiful big location with outdoor seating, in Clearwater and the Odessa Tap Room as well, right off State Road 54 on Success Drive. Taco Tuesday, $2 chicken or pork tacos, $3 fish and shrimp tacos. Wednesday, $5 off their fantastic burgers. That's a big discount right there. Thursday, $10 beer and pretzel special, and it's a home-cooked fantastic special with the sauces and all that. And half-off appetizers Monday through Thursday after 8 p.m., at Big Storm Brewing Company, but they are all about the beer, Ira. Get to BigStormBrewery.com, their website, or JoeBucksFan.com. You can click on the Storm Tracker and find out where to purchase Big Storm beer near you and get that Bromosa. It is where it's at this summer.
Taco Tuesday sounds very appetizing, Steve. With a beer to wash it now, I'm in, baby.
All right, Sage, let me throw this past your brilliant mind. Speaking of Ndamukong Suh, and we don't even have to comment on this unless you want to, Ira. He was on a whiskey podcast, a whiskey show all about whiskey. Turns out Sue is an investor in a small family-owned distillery, and he's a connoisseur of whiskey. And he was actually drinking through this 35-minute show, tasting all these different whiskeys and discussing the aromas and all sorts of things. And it was very relaxed, and I thought it was interesting that Sue said he doesn't drink whiskey after games because after games he's all about hydration, complete hydration, and for his body repair. But typically, unless he's playing, of course, He said he watches Monday Night Football and enjoys whiskey, and maybe he doesn't have as much if his wife wants to have wine with dinner, but Monday is his night during the week to apparently drink a lot of whiskey and watch Monday Night Football, which I thought was funny. But Sage, he was asked about playing, and he cut off the host. He said, I got plenty of years left. He talked about his fitness regimen, how much he's into that, and he's up at 5 a.m. so he can work out, and then by the start of the business day, he's ready to dive into all of his investments, and we know that he's Warren Buffett's buddy and all that. And so Sue really made it seem like he's not going anywhere.
Well, I don't think his long-term future is linked to the Bucks, Lee, but I do think that if the Bucks release him going into the 2021 season, I do think he'd land with another team. I do. And play another 2 years for another team and finish his career as a distinguished vagabond. How do you like that, Lee? Distinguished vagabond.
He's a mercenary, that's for sure.
You know, he's a mercenary. You know, he gets his 3-4 sacks, shuts down the run, ties up blockers, and does everything that Bowles wants him to do. And if he comes out in obvious passing situations, so be it. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But he does stay in shape. Speaking of that, guys, and I've done a little research. You'd be proud of me, Steve. I'm not just watching Yellowstone reruns. I happen to see a little video of Jason Pierre-Paul, gentleman, that shows him in training. And the guy's an animal. Now, I think Sue's a notch below JPP in terms of a conditioning freak. But this Pierre-Paul, he's quirky, guys. He is quirky. But when it comes to football, boy, he's serious as a heart attack. Lee, you've seen that video, right, Lee?
Well, I'm not sure what video you're referring to, but I
think it's fresh. It's the last day or two.
Well, yeah. I do know that JPP loves to put workout videos on his Instagram stories account. Unfortunately, I'm so bored with workout videos. Cause, you know, come on. It's not football. Like Warren Sapp famously said, you don't pump weights on the 50-yard line. But JPP puts out so many workout videos that I'm like numb to them, and I swipe past them, and once every 6 months he puts out some news. But I swipe past the news because I'm so bored with his workout videos. But he does work out a lot, and he works out hard, and he loves to put the videos up on Instagram.
Quick thought for you here on the, as we wait, basically we're patiently waiting like every other NFL fan to find out what's going to be going on with preseason, as we mentioned, and with the opportunity for players to opt out. And you know, apparently one thing that's being debated is who would get to opt out on the season at full pay, right? Because the league can't tell everybody, hey, you can opt out at full pay, and half the guys would leave. So
yeah.
they may have an option for certain guys with medical conditions to opt out at full pay. And one thing that was mentioned in the stuff I was looking at is sleep apnea. And I don't know if you remember, but Ryan Jensen, that was a big issue for him earlier in his career. He had to be diagnosed in Baltimore. And he's spoken about it. He talked about it when he got to the Bucks. He sleeps with the machines and all that. He had a very serious case. And apparently, sleep apnea is an issue with people who get coronavirus. Now, I don't think Ryan Jensen's going to back out. But, you know, if the NFL somehow comes up with that on a list where it says, Jensen, you can have $10 million to sit out the season, I'm not saying he's going to skip it, but it creates an interesting thought when, you know, when someone's offering to hand you money like that. For no work. And one other thing that I think's interesting, Ira, it's totally out there, and you can comment on both, Lee, you too. Rookies. If rookies don't play this year, right, if you decide I'm not signing my contract, let's say you're any rookie in any year, you decide I'm not signing my contract, I'll go back into the draft next year. That's what happens if a rookie doesn't sign. So, you know, if college football gets canceled, and guys have a chance to go back into the draft, and none of these Bucks rookies have signed contracts. I don't know if a guy like Tyler Johnson, who everybody says is a steal in the fifth round, if he thinks to himself, you know, maybe I just go back into the draft and I'll be a third round pick or a late second round pick after, you know, all these guys who didn't get to prove themselves in college this past year, you think that's a possibility, Ira? And keep in mind, Johnson is a guy who sat out, I believe he sat out, didn't he sit out bowl game and then the Shrine game or something like that?
Might have sat out the Shrine. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was All-Star Bowl? Yeah, you're right.
Well, without using the word collusion, I would say NFL executives as a group would frown upon how they look at a player that did that in terms of not signing his rookie deal, deciding to go back into the draft. Johnson wouldn't have any more tape to show than he has right now, and every team bypassed him through four rounds. Why would that change a year from now, next April? I don't think it would be looked on very kindly. I'm not saying there would be an unwritten rule like let's not draft this guy, but I don't think they'd want to reward somebody that turned his back. You know, there's a fraternity out there, and if the guy can do it to the Bucks, you know, he could do it to them too. First part, this is a very, very murky area. Lee, I don't think the NFL knows what the heck to do because, you know, they call it comorbidities, which is a very ominous phrase. But, you know, it covers things like diabetes, you know, heart murmurs, obesity. I mean, a whole range of things. And if you keep expanding the list, Lee, you know, a decent amount percentage of NFL players are going to fall into one of the categories. and if they want to use that and still make $7 million, I mean, that's a problem. The problem for the league, I don't think fans would look very kindly on it. They'd say, hey, I don't show up to work. I'm not getting paid. And I don't make $7 million. There's so many things to work out, Lee, and not a lot of time to work them out. We're talking about September 10th. I mean, it's going to be here before you know it. And they got to decide what to do with players that want to opt out, and can they do it justifiably and still get their money? Boy, this is one complex situation for the NFL, unprecedented. Gotta hope that they never go through anything like this again. And by the very nature, Lee, of this pandemic, it just opens the door for all these little variables to creep in. There's a lot to cover when the NFLPA sits down with the league over these things. It's not black and white, certainly.
No, it's not black and white, and certainly I hope the league never goes through this again, because that will mean the world will never have to go through this again. It's nuts. To Steve's point about Tyler Johnson, he's using him for an example. If he would enter the 2021 draft, just sit out. Any player that does that, I think, is a moron. Because wherever you're drafted, first round, fifth overall, you enter the next draft, that's a stacked deck already you're going up against. There's no guarantees you're going to get drafted higher or by a better team. If that's what you're, you know, like, oh, I don't want to play for the Bucks or a losing team. I want to go play for the Cowboys or something like that. That's an idiotic roll of the dice. You're very likely going to be picked lower because you haven't played football in a year than you would be picked higher. I just think that's stupid. Unless you're really getting jammed by the team that drafted you. I mean, really getting jammed. Like, they're like, the only thing they're bidding is far below the norm for wherever your position and where you were drafted. Unless you're really getting jammed by somebody, that's really stupid. Because, number one, you're going to miss out on a year's salary that you will never get back. You won't, because that clock resets. If you don't play your rookie year, you decide to sit out and get drafted, well, your clock resets next year, not this year. It's next year. So you're losing that money you'll never get back, number one. Number two, there's no guarantee at all that you're going to be drafted as high or with the team you desire. I just think that's just that. If that happens, whoever the guy's agent is a clown.
And Steve, one more point. You're delaying by 1 year your opportunity to get a second contract.
Exactly.
So why would you want to do that too, Steve? You know, there's factors.
Hey, I'm not advocating it, but you never know what somebody's thinking, and it doesn't necessarily. He was the only guy I could think of on the Buccaneers may apply, but you know, I could see maybe a quarterback who was taken third round or something, who thinks he could maybe jump higher or in a better situation. But it doesn't make a lot of sense. But this season doesn't make a lot of sense. So
yeah.
Ira, you know what? I'm going to ask you if next podcast, are you up for making a season prediction on the Buccaneers pre-training camp with the qualification that we'll get back to another prediction in September after you see how things shake out? Are you up for putting your foot down, your sage line in the sand?
I am, and knowing that Javier and his cohorts across South America are duly noting everything that we say and are going to hold it up to us at the end of the season, even though we can revise it at the end of training camp. You know, nothing we say on this podcast goes unnoticed by our loyal listeners, and they're not above reminding us how far off our, you know, I picked 10 wins, guys, for the 2017 Bucks. I should have known the Swaggy Baker effect. I should have known it. And instead, we got a disaster. Yes, Steve, let's start the nonsense next week.
Lee, are you up for that?
Sure.
All right. Well, I'll email you fellas some parameters, and we'll come to the table with some little bit of juice for next podcast.
Steve, have you heard anything from Todd Wright about a fantasy league, Steve? Anything going on there?
Well, what I'll tell you is that the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast will be back later this month. Actually, next week. It returns for its fourth season presented by Hooters, our good friends there. And Todd is planning to have in-person fantasy drafts. He's got it all lined up. They won't be at Hooters based on Hooters' requests. So I don't want anybody to think that we should do it at Hooters or we want to, but they asked not to do it there because of crowds and things. But it will be done in person, Ira, and we are counting on you getting clobbered in the league again.
I thought I had one hell of a team, gentlemen. When I walked out of Hooters last August, I thought I was the man. And when I started 1-5, I realized I wasn't the man, Lee. I still don't know what the hell happened. Now, I had Ben Roethlisberger, you know, who had a wasted season. But I had other quarterbacks, so I had Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what happened, but, Steve, I think it's refreshing for you to say that we're not going to be doing it on Zoom. It's going to be in person at a location to be determined, right, Steven?
Correct. Yes, absolutely. And we'll get that information out there. And Todd's podcast, of course, starts next week. Now, Ira, I wanted to bring this up for the fans who obsess about this stuff. And it's been out there. And given how tight the Bucks are on money, I guess it is relevant as we look toward maybe signing a last-second reinforcement or two. Shaq Barrett signed his franchise tag, but he also put in a grievance to the league to declare him as an edge rusher and a defensive end on the tag versus the edge rushing linebacker on the tag because there's a $2 million difference there. So he wants to be declared a defensive end so he can make $2 million extra this year on the tag. And so it'll go under review. And I want to share what Bill Polian said. And I guess we quote Bill Polian a lot, but not everybody likes Bill Polian, but Bill Polian actually developed and negotiated the original franchise tag. He explained that on the radio last night, and it was written to keep John Elway in Denver. Is really why they came up with that, if he explained it all. But he said that Shaq has no chance whatsoever, and the number one reason is that the new CBA had the opportunity to completely negotiate this loophole out of the CBA, but they didn't do it. They didn't think it was that important, and they didn't care. And Shaq, partially because of that, has no case whatsoever because NFLPA really can't argue it for him because they didn't make the argument before. And he explained how he testified when Jimmy Graham tried to be declared a wide receiver instead of a tight end, and he lost. Jimmy Graham lost. And that he said Jimmy Graham's case was much better than Shaq. So don't worry, Bucks fans. We're not going to lose $2 million on the cap.
Yeah, my takeaway from Steve's remarks is there are ramifications, whether you want to say unintended or intended, ramifications for how a team designates a particular player on their depth chart. For example, Jason Pierre-Paul, all of a sudden Todd Bowles comes to town, and JPP is listed as
as a linebacker. Now, last time, New York Giant fans saw JP at his best, he was chasing Tom Brady all around the Super Bowl and hounding him for a Giants victory as a defensive end for the New York Giants. Comes here, Bowles shows up in town. All of a sudden, he's a linebacker. Now, Steve, one thing that I don't think you mentioned, and tell me where this fits in, but Steve, wasn't there a precedent in this regard about a an outside linebacker wanted to be listed as an edge rusher and bumped up the salary? I forgot the guy's name, but Lee, Steve, isn't there a little precedent where the guy won his case?
Yeah, it was like a year or two ago. I'm like you, Ira. I don't remember the name. I don't remember the specifics, but I remember that was grieved. It was fairly, at the time, it was fairly newsworthy. And
Lee, the guy pocketed like an extra $1.5 million dollars off that case.
Well, just the opposite. He was looking for better money. And because, again, he wanted to be classified as a defensive end, not a edge rusher. And after it was grieved, the mediator came back like, no, nope, you're an edge rusher. You're an outside linebacker.
I have a question for you, Ira. If Ronald Jones takes a step backwards this year, can we have him reclassified as a quality control coach?
I'd list him as a long snapper at that point, Stephen, and we'll take our chances.
Yeah,
but
with the Shaq grievance real quick, I don't understand. It seems so ridiculous to me where Shaq signs up as a free agent to come to the Bucks, and they say, hey, you're going to play outside linebacker in our 3-4 for Todd Bowles, who always runs a 3-4, and you're a linebacker, and now he's saying he was not a linebacker. To me, it's almost kind of silly.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this one. Now, I like to reward a guy that leads the league in sacks. I do, but it's not like he's not making his money this year as a franchise player. And you know, when Barrett was in Denver, he was a linebacker, and when he came to Tampa, he didn't have any reason to think he wouldn't be a linebacker. Now he produces 19.5 sacks. Buck fans are overjoyed, but he's a linebacker. And always has been, where JPP, I think, actually has a better case, should he have been franchised, because his whole history is as a defensive end.
Someone else is grieving this as well. I can't remember who, but the same situation. He's an outside linebacker. He's trying to get paid defensive end money.
Ira, send us out of here. Send Buccaneers fans home for the weekend with some of your sage wisdom.
Amid a national pandemic, it's easy to be depressed. Our world's been shaken. There's no question about it. We don't ever want to go through anything like this again. But if Buck fans need something to cheer them up, which they do, they got to start thinking about the 2020 season. It's right there in front of us. Tom Brady is healthy and ready to go and having fun for the first time in a long time. Guys, the season is going to be here before you know it. And whether there's going to be 18,000 fans at Ray J or no fans at Ray J, the 2020 season is going to be played. And by the looks of it, it's going to be a very special one for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it's very, very close. Wear a kimono.